The following program contains adult themes and may be unsuitable for children. Listener discretion is advised.
Don't touch that dial. This Week in Mormons is here. We're here to bring you Mormon news, talk about Mormon things, get it going real awesome like. And so
that was good news, Jeff. That was good news.
We thank you for joining us, everyone. And we hope that you'll stay with us for the entire duration of this show, however long it may last, that you'll share it with others.
So a friend of mine looked up this show. He found out that I did this podcast. He looks it up and said that he tried to listen to it, but he couldn't last because it was the one where we introed with the Circle of Life music. And he was like, yeah, that guy just made that yelling noise that went forever. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? And so then he pulls it up on his phone and it's like, you sustained that note for a good, I don't know, a good 5-10 seconds.
It was, and it was wasn't impressive. Even going for that. Well, I was just doing a yell, and then you had the gumption.
Turned him off, and he went to another show. He couldn't handle it. He said, then I heard his voice, and all I could hear is the yelling. I had to leave.
Oh, that's fine. Go listen to some lamer podcast. We don't need you anyway.
Cultural Hall is there with open arms.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever. Sure.
I'm sorry.
I know he's
an open rivalry. Can we battle? I feel like we need competition.
First rule of politics, Al, you don't name your opponent. We just say, okay. My opponent.
My opponent would say...
Our opponents would have you listen to their awful programming.
We don't feel... That does not represent the views of this show. We feel like...
Wait a minute. Is this the first time ever that I am saying something and you are
trying... We feel like our opponent...
And you are issuing the disclaimer?
...is an upstanding group. They do good things. We all just talk about Mormon stuff.
Oh, so what you're trying to do is show us all as like brothers and sisters in Christ.
I like that you sent me a note telling me not to eat my snap peas while we record. Jeff, I am starving. And I will eat snap peas.
No,
don't send me more notes. No, I don't want to read
them.
I'm
passing you notes while we record. I was doing that, you see, so that we could surreptitiously solve problems that might arise during our podcast without our listeners being aware of them. But thank you for airing our dirty laundry, Al. Appreciate it.
I'm excited that you use surreptitiously. I feel like that's an underused word outside of people that are just walking out of a performance of Wicked on Broadway.
Do they use that in Wicked?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen Wicked for...
Surreptitiously.
I haven't seen it. Last time I saw Wicked was over, 4 years ago? It's been a while. I don't
remember.
With
Alanis Morissette. She was great in that. Anywho.
Wait a minute, huh? Hold the phone. Back up the truck. Alanis Morissette was in Wicked?
No, that's a trick. It was a joke.
Oh,
I
good.
Did.
Because that would have been awesome. Like, seriously, I would have been all over that. Last time I saw Wicked, I actually saw it in London, and it was very entertaining. And, of course, they changed some of just the dialogue so it matches British-isms. But
yeah,
some of the delivery and the style of it, though, is still very American, and it just didn't play. Stuff that I thought was just genuinely amusing, and when I've seen it in the States, would have the audience laughing uproariously. The Brits were just like, yeah, okay, all right. So
that sounds like them.
That's my cultural thing for the week.
Those dry, angry people. Brits.
It's going to be a great show, everyone. We are recording late at night because that's when our scheduling permitted. So we're likely to.
Yeah, that's my fault.
No. It's no one's fault.
I had delays in Denver and Salt Lake.
But you still showed up right around when you told me you were going to show up. So it's
yeah, ish. I mean, I make good time. I make good time on those roads.
That just stinks that you had to fly to Denver and then there. Considering it's just Utah to Kansas City, and to have to stop anywhere in between is...
Yeah, so that's lame. Like a two-hour flight. Normally, it's worth it for me to spend a little bit of extra cash to get the nonstop. But it was a difference of like $300.
Yeah,
and like even at like $200, I'm like, it's worth it to save like 10 hours of my life. I will pay the extra money just to fly.
Was
right there.
This on an airline that has a hub in Salt Lake City?
It was on Frontier.
Okay,
or,
no.
It was on our competitor.
Our competition. I assumed it was Frontier because you went to Denver, but I didn't know.
Yeah. And Frontier is awful, by the way.
Not a huge fan either. Though I do enjoy that they have all the tails of their planes have different animals on them.
Yeah, that's neat. But we pull out of Salt Lake. I feel like little gestures would go so far. Customer service people, just try a little bit.
Oh, they don't care about that on Frontier.
I put them on the exact same plateau as U.S. Airways, which is the absolute worst in customer service.
I'm going to completely agree with you. I think that U.S. Airways, ironically, not even being a discount airline, but is the worst airline in America.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, how has your week been, Jeff? Sorry I'm making you be here late.
No.
We'll be loopy. It'll be crazy.
It's like those old times on the show. Back before I was married, and I'd just do whatever, and I'd stay up till 2 in the morning talking to you and doing shows and not caring.
Oh, those were the days. Remember when you were in Scotland?
Yeah, but we didn't do the show back then.
Didn't we?
No.
Are you sure?
I am sure.
Remember talking
We put up our first show at the end of January in 2010. And I have not even set foot in Scotland since 2009. So.
Oh, heavens.
It's been hard. Yeah. It would have been a lot of fun to do from there, though. Based on all the places you were, I'd be hitting you up and saying, like, hey, guy, got to go to bed at some point. You'd be like, what do you want from me? It's 5 p.m. And I'd be like, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
That's just how it is. Anyway, I had a great weekend. I went down to Durham, North Carolina, cultural capital of America.
Oh, yeah.
Very exciting.
The old cotton picker plantation down there.
Yeah, tobacco country. It was fine. I have a cousin there who is moving away in a couple of weeks, moving to Austria, actually.
Oh, my.
And so, yeah, her husband's going on to do postdoctoral work. So we wanted to pop down there and see him before they go off on this great adventure.
Is this Bob? Is this cousin Bob?
No, Bob is my uncle.
I just made that name up. I forgot you had an Uncle Bob.
I do have an Uncle Bob. Uncle Bob's a great guy.
Class act, Bob.
Good dude. But anyway, so they are going to be going off there. We just went there for a day, basically.
With your wife, you made this trip.
Yeah, she'd never met them, actually, because they couldn't come to the wedding, obviously, being East
Coasters.
Because
you have to buy a gift. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, they didn't.
We've all been there.
Actually, that is weak. Did they get us a gift? I don't remember. But they gave us a lot of free stuff because they're trying to clean out their house. So it's all good.
You took their free stuff.
I got a stainless steel colander out of this weekend. It was wonderful.
And a case of Lindsay olives. I don't know why.
It was just delightful. So we had fine times. I added another Capitol building to my list.
That's my boy, Jeff.
I'd been down there before, but I never popped over to Raleigh to actually see the Capitol building.
I almost, two weekends ago, drove south and did like the 4 southern states below Missouri just to hit all the Capitol buildings and have pictures.
Like, you were going to drive to...
I was going to do Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and then, like, up through Jefferson City, Missouri, and then home.
You were just going to go do all those?
I was going to go do them.
That would be so lonely by yourself. No, you shouldn't do that.
Jeff,
maybe
here's the thing.
When we go on our epic trip, we should drive down to Columbus, Ohio on the way back instead.
We'll loop down, then through Frankfort, Kentucky, and then back.
Oh,
to
this
DC.
Is this is a genius plan.
Maha!
Knock off some more. I need to fill out more East Coast places as far as capitals.
We'll visit the tombstone of Daniel Boone.
And we could go to Lansing, Michigan while we're at it.
Maybe not Lansing.
Yeah, probably not, but...
But maybe. Yeah, maybe, buddy.
So it was good. Durham was fine. Met a lot of good people. Church is true everywhere. It's wonderful.
Turns out Jesus is real.
Yeah. So that's what we did. It's different down there compared to here. North Carolina has a lot of cities and a lot of metro areas, but in between them, it's very rural. Very, very, just much so. You just wind around on little... It felt like being
the
in Missouri. The rural jur. It felt like being in Missouri, where like your neck of the woods in Missouri, but you're actually in suburbia, basically.
This land is my land.
Anyway, less important am I, and more important art thou. Tell me.
So I went and set up my new apartment in Salt Lake this week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's very exciting. I'm a couple of blocks from downtown. I have a hipster Harmon's that I can... I go and get a yogurt and a muffin for breakfast and sit and type on my laptop while all the other guys with skinny jeans and sweaters come in. It's an exciting place. And...
I saw your Instagram photo of that. I was happy for you.
Oh, so, like, I'm genuinely excited about this, to be able to walk down there and have internet still and things to do.
Yeah.
I've been... Sugar House does not lend itself well to the walkabouts. And so having made this move, I went shopping. And in two nights, I was so impressed. I had a friend help me out. In two nights, we had all the Walmart run, all the IKEA run. I have a fully functioning apartment with everything I need.
Everything
except
television.
Except the rings on the shower curtain. Why can you buy a shower curtain and they do not give you rings?
Because rings are a separate designer item, so you have to get rings.
But like, so I took a shower this morning with like the bread clasp tags all wired together in big loops.
Twisty and then ties?
Then my measuring cup rings pulled off and like put on there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, very good.
It was not pretty. I was not excited.
I like that your 20s are over, and yet you still live as a college student sometimes.
I'm resourceful. The day before, so yesterday, I took a bath. Have you ever seen a 6'7" man in a bathtub? There was zero. All of me underwater at the same time,
okay,
getting
hold on.
Clean.
I just want to, yeah, this is, I guess I could say I feel your pain. I mean, I'm 6'2". I kind of feel your pain.
No, you're like a 6'2" midget. You have no idea what I'm going through.
I have no idea, but I do know that your average bathtub is not designed for anyone to really enjoy if you're taller than like 5'10".
No, not at all. And so I couldn't even fit my torso, like the upper part of my body couldn't all go in at one time. And so I was either like half headstand getting my head wet, or with my head out, body in, and legs sticking almost to the shower head, or legs almost in all at one time, more like one leg dipping and rinsing, one leg dipping and rinsing. It was awful.
Okay.
So I had to improvise and get some shower curtain rings going on.
You did a great job.
I don't feel like I'm a college student here.
No,
I feel like I needed a shower, and I made it happen.
And you've made great strides, admittedly. You're actually trying to furnish apartments and do things. I'm impressed.
Jeff, I bought art. I bought an art thing from IKEA.
Which one did you buy?
The map.
Which map? The U.S. map?
It's like the huge one.
I've seen that one. That's a good choice.
It's for my bedroom, so I can stare at states.
Are you going to draw? You should draw on it. I've got a similar map where I draw everywhere I've been along the roads.
I have seen that.
It's a nice way to actually graphically represent. You really see where you kind of have your own hubs, if you will.
Like they don't have roads on these maps.
Oh, so it's not a one with roads.
No, it's a world map.
Okay, see, that's different. You could put little pins on where you've been.
Maybe I'll just put I'll draw a red dot on it.
Which is put a red pin if you've been there, put a green pin if you want to go there.
This is a canvas, Jeff. This is like this
all
is
the
art
better.
Piece that I had to fake stretch on my carpet to get it to go.
Oh, okay.
It was crazy. Anyway, yeah, probably not putting pins in it, but maybe.
Look, you're buying stuff. You're taking baths. Life is good for you.
Okay, yeah, I like it.
I'm having flashbacks of a time on my mission when I tried to take a bath. It was more because our hot water broke, and so I heated up a lot of water on all four burners on the stove. I tried to heat up a lot of hot water, dumped it in the because we were tired of showering with cold water. So I dumped it in the bathtub, and then I just kind of flopped around like a beached seal.
No, there's no...
trying to clean myself, but there's just not that much water there, even when you have four potfuls of it from the stove.
And that was the other thing in the shower. So I'm laying in the bath, and I'm trying to fill it up, and it starts going down the overflow. The water is pouring down the overflow, and it's like halfway up my chest. And I'm like, are you for real? Like, who are we bathing in these, children? Where are the grown people baths? Which maybe there aren't any. Maybe that's a thing that's not ever supposed to happen. I don't know.
Maybe not. Anyways, folks, we've got a lot of good news we're going to talk about this week.
But if I may, the movies where you have like where you have the girl in the bathtub and then the sneaky guy that's in the bathtub and then the other person comes in and he like ducks under the water to be hidden under the bubbles, that could never, ever happen.
Those like, people have
physically
big whirlpool tubs.
Impossible. I would have a leg like stretched all the way out to the door. They would have for sure seen me.
You've been asking me about certain investments you can make or things you could get, Al. I think you should make a goal to have a custom-built large whirlpool tub that someone your size can enjoy.
And a toilet set
with
the correct height for a 6'7" man.
Are you trying to say that when you use the toilet, like your knees are hitting your face or what?
Well, yeah, I sit down. I feel like Dikembe Mutombo when I'm sitting down on a toilet.
Nice reference.
Anywho.
Let's all watch The Air Up There now. Great Kevin Bacon movie. Terrific film. Love it. Yeah, we got a lot of good news this week. Oh, I don't even know where to start. So many things, but stay tuned for the whole show to hear all of it. Otherwise, you're just wasting your life. I'm going to start off this week.
Stay tuned.
Hey, well, the point is you don't want to tune out or you might miss something wonderful.
I'm just, this is my last snappy. I'm done after this.
Yeah,
I'm
okay. So anyway, Ogden, as many of you have known, for the past number of years, it's been probably over 3 years since the church announced this, the Ogden Temple has been stripped down, laid bare, and is now being built back up. With an all-new design, won't look like the Provo Temple anymore. Basically a new temple, except they use the existing superstructure to keep it all together. So a milestone happened.
I love that you described the Ogden Temple as though it were in an abusive relationship.
And it will be, and it will be anew.
He broke it down and then he built it back up the way he wanted it.
Not the way she wanted. I am full of nothing but spiritual metaphors. So thank you. So the crowning achievement of this is the steeple, the spire has been built, and it got its Moroni back. And this is not a different Moroni. This is
it's the same one?
The same Moroni. They cleaned it up, though. You know, they refinished it. They redid it all. And they put him back on. Moroni, this might be one of the few cases in the church when Moroni gets put on a temple twice. Very few times this has ever happened. I mean, that temple in Samoa burnt down 10 years ago, but then they just built an entirely new one. This is the same Moroni being replaced, which has not really happened as far as I know.
Yeah, that's neat. So here's something.
There's no real
the
news.
The Moroni is fiberglass. He's fiberglass with gold plate.
Well, leafing. How else do you think
gold
that big heavy thing's going to stay up there? What do you want it to be?
I always
solid?
Thought it was like brass. I thought these were huge, monstrous things.
I think it's like
things.
This tungsten thing that's leafed in gold.
Isn't that what it is, like on the Salt Lake Temple?
Well, the Salt Lake Temple, probably, because I don't think fiberglass existed in the late 1800s. I'm not
sure. Brigham Young was a very forward-thinking man.
He was. I mean, the wide streets in Salt Lake, you know, elevator shafts in the temple. We know all of these things.
Yeah, they're like...
I'm looking at fiberglass right now, and I don't see a history of it. I just see things about it. It's shameful. Anyway, so that's just a brief story. But Moroni, he's back. If you go to Ogden now, you will still see a temple that lacks...
Yeah, he was first molded from hammered copper.
Okay. So probably some of the older ones are actually, you know, legit.
Well, that I feel so deceived.
Maybe even some of the newer ones are better. Bear in mind, this is, like we said, this is the original temple.
What if they actually put money in the Moroni, and then Monson had this running joke where he's like, there's always money in the Moroni.
And he starts shaking Elder Holland.
What do you mean? You burned it down.
But, anyway, but that is another good question, though. This temple was from the 70s, and if any era of temple building was going to feature fiberglass Moronis,
yep.
It was the 70s, so perhaps it's changed, perhaps it hasn't. Who knows?
I hope it has. I don't like that it was that way.
Maybe you can donate.
Anyway, congratulations, Ogden. Well done.
Well played. We talked about that for 3 minutes longer than we needed to. But there we go.
Now let's go to the hard-hitting news. Peggy Fletcher wants names, people.
She's going
to
name
Peggy
names.
Peggy Fletcher Stack wants names. She takes issue...
With an
article in The Friend. First, Peggy Fletcher Stack. What are you doing reading The Friend? You crazy woman.
It's a slow news week. She's trying to find something to complain about.
Man, who's our listener that loved us but loved her and was torn in his love? Do you remember?
I don't remember this because I'm pretty sure that all of our listeners are loyal to us and no one else.
No, we had one. Not Richard Gibbons. He's a nice man. Before Rick, one of the Ricks, he was like, hey, she's a nice woman. I like her.
I am sure that she's a lovely woman. We should go back and look at some of our old comments from way early episodes and see if any of those people still listen today.
We should. Probably not. Well, so anyway, Peggy Fletcher Stack was reading The Friend for looking to verify the journalistic integrity of The Friend.
No, she was trying to find things
reporters.
That she could understand. Ayo!
And so she read an article called Remembering Mother, Stories from Our Prophets, where prophets recounted about things that their mothers had done. And she says there's one problem. The mothers themselves remain nameless. Is that the best way for kids to remember them? Question mark.
In a world where prophets' mothers have no name.
So, what... This is a stupid story, but I like that she was reading The Friend. I like that she takes issue with prophets remembering their mothers but not remembering them by name, as though Julie Hinckley would have more sway on a child under 12 to remember Julie Hinckley, and that, like, that had some relevance, rather than the mother of Gordon B. Hinckley. I feel like we have a better chance of instilling the principles and stories of this mother by being the mother of Gordon B. Hinckley. And what is she without the identity of her son, right? I don't care about Jane Doe Hinckley. I care about Gordon B. Hinckley's mother. It's the association that matters.
But why don't we get to know who that mother, what that mother's name is?
Because there are so many mothers. There are so many.
There are too many mothers for us to remember.
Well, you could talk about the great things of any of them.
I would argue that every general authority also has a mother. Who wants to remember that?
My mind is blown. Yeah, I can't remember all the names of the prophets. We can't. Jeff and I couldn't combine come up with all the names of the members of the 12. I guarantee it.
The 12 right now?
Not to mention their mothers.
I could do it right now.
And what about their fathers? Peggy Fletcher Stack, so quick to point a finger, you didn't even notice that there was no article about the father.
It's true. So, well, it's Mother's Day this weekend, so.
Does not make it right, Jeff. Don't stand behind her.
Some of the comments were very amusing, arguing that, hey, we know there's a heavenly mother, but we don't know her name either. So maybe it's a parallel. Or probably the most sound response was simply that it's a magazine for children, and the point is for them to value their mothers, not to be able to, you know, get flashcards out and memorize the names of.
I feel like she's taking a note from the Jehovah Witnesses, where she's like, "Man, but what is their name? Tell us their name." That was my
favorite. Or another good comment from Willie 3. Peggy, do they pay you for this crap? Seriously, Peggy, this is a note. This is a new low for you. Seriously, it's a children's magazine, not a source for deep doctrinal discussions.
Oh, apparently they all agree with me. They must have listened to the show.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I think that what you are saying about the things is...
Oh, Peggy Fletcher Stack.
In other news, I hate to use the phrase how Mormon is, you know, someone is, right? Because that assumes that there is, like, a way to, you know, a measuring stick, I guess, for how Mormon someone is. But Bryce Harper, last year's Major League Baseball National League Rookie of the Year, plays on the Washington Nationals. Talented kid. Mormon, but I don't think anyone's ever known, for lack of a better expression, how Mormon he is, how into the church he is, what the dealio is with that. But there's an article in the Deseret News this week by Mitch Kunzler that really helps us understand
everything.
By
who?
Can
you say that name again?
Mitch. Kunzler? Kunzler?
Okay.
Mitchy poo? I don't know. But the point is, there are some actual interviews, like anything else, like from CBS.com and ESPN and all this stuff, where he talks about his faith and how he actually feels like he describes himself as a walking Book of Mormon.
Whoa.
Yeah.
How's that?
Well, if you mess with him, he's going to chop your arms off.
Wait, so he's like a Book of Mormon in that he's like Ammon.
No, he's saying that he feels that he can be a good missionary. He can be a walking Book of Mormon and help people on the baseball field and off it.
I mean,
you know, that his religion can be used for good. And that it's actually something we've wondered about this because...
Did he go on a mission?
No, he's only 20.
Oh, okay.
Because last we heard, he has a girlfriend who plays soccer at BYU. So apparently Bryce Harper's like into the church thing. And you might remember last season when he had that great question when a reporter asked him about his favorite beer and his response
was... That's a clown question, bro.
Which is a great... It's an awesome remark.
It's a clown question.
Yeah.
Well, good for Bryce Harper. All we know. It's nice to see a guy doing good stuff.
Doesn't make him better or worse of a person.
Don't you know somebody who had him in their home for breakfast? I saw that comment on Facebook. Made me laugh how fame-mongering some people are.
I don't remember this comment.
Oh, it's out there.
Are you serious? Help me know this one. Tell me.
It's out there.
Teach me.
I don't know. I'll look at it later.
All right.
Anyway, Jeff, did you know that Molotov cocktails are a real thing? I thought they only existed in Grand Theft Auto. I did not know that they were an actual weapon.
Yeah, no, you don't mess around. I mean, usually you find them during, you know, protests revolving around civil liberties and stuff like that.
Anywhere where people are drinking Bud Light or Bud Light Lime, where they have excess bottles and gasoline and rags, which I feel like all kind of follow that same crowd. Anybody drinking Bud Light Lime?
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, but no. I think I don't think the places where Molotov cocktails are typically used are places maybe, where Budweiser even has a presence.
Maybe a Miller Genuine or like the banquet beer, like a Coors banquet beer. I feel like that would have the Molotov cocktail crowd. I don't know. So anyway.
I disagree. I'm pretty sure it is Blue Moon. Nothing but good old Blue Moon.
That is a classy hipster beer, Jeff.
It's a Blue Moon and a Heineken. That's all you want.
It's clearly not the banquet beer,
no,
of Coors.
It's Sam Adams.
Now you're just naming all the beers that you can think of.
That, well, yeah, years ago.
You're not being strategic in naming the class of people that associate themselves with a certain beer.
Do you want to know something exciting, actually, though? Well, not exciting.
What?
Years ago, I worked in market research, and one of our clients, I can name this now, was Miller Coors. So the Mormon boy, spent all my days doing studies on beer.
When I worked at a grocery store, I had to stock the beer.
Look, you just mentioned consumer preferences and trends, and that's all I did. I studied all sorts of nonsense,
Jeff,
that's
impressive. That's cool. Anywho,
it's actually more amusing what they come up with as far as testing ideas, like things that they want to float to the public that are awful.
What did they do? Give me an example.
Oh, gosh, it's been a while now. Things like a setup kit to actually set up your own, like, portable bar in your living room for a party.
So you're like, would you like to have a portable bar? Would that make you feel like a drunk?
Neon signs that are attached to a keg. It's been a while. It's been a couple of years. I don't remember everything. But a lot of it was pretty awful. And you're like, well, no wonder this tests poorly. Duh.
Well, so in Ogden, of course, I don't even feel like this is news because it happened in Ogden, where I'm pretty sure they have bars over the windows on the churches. But somebody threw a Molotov cocktail through a kitchen window at a church in Ogden. The fire burned itself out, was contained to the kitchen, and they had about $1,000 in damages, which I suspect it just caught the fork drawer on fire and burned the 10,000 forks that we keep in every LDS meeting house. I think that's what happened. But the FBI's out there talking. No, not the FBI. The arms or alcohol, tobacco, and firearm people. No, and the FBI. Never mind.
Okay, lots of people are looking into it.
Yeah, they are concerned about the trashy people that live in Ogden, which I think is great. I think they should get them all out of there.
Ogden gets its fiberglass Moroni, and in the same week, Molotov cocktails at church.
Jeff, what if these are related? Some people, who in Ogden would not want that Moroni back up there? I think it's the Restaurant Association. I think it's the Restaurant Association of Downtown striking back.
It's all the angry people who are getting gentrified out of downtown.
Striking back. Yes, exactly. It's the bar owners that don't like the Moroni up there. They petitioned against it, and now they're sending a message. Well, message received.
Oh, just wait for this. How long, with the Provo City Center Temple going up, Center Street in Provo is, you know, pretty quiet and stuff, but it does have bars. How long do you think it'll be until the church somehow starts quietly behind closed doors, under the table, trying to just kind of nudge some of these establishments out of the area? The church does not like those things near its temples.
Yeah, look at Mesa.
I mean, I have it on good authority that the church pushed very hard when they put in the temple in Manhattan to prohibit the Lowe's Theater down the street from showing R-rated movies.
Really?
No, I made that up.
Oh. Well,
that would have been
neat.
Cool, though. Right? In other chapel destruction news, a car rolled into a Mormon chapel at the Joseph Smith Memorial in Royalton, Vermont. Now, I've never been here.
Did the car drive in or it just rolled in? Like, they didn't set the parking brake?
It rolled over a bank, and as it says in the article, ruptured the side of a building. You can see the damage yourself.
See, because I've been there. I'm trying to think of where
I don't know about
from.
Now, is this... Where's Royalton, Vermont? Is this close to Sharon, Vermont? Is this like his birthplace? What Joseph Smith Memorial is here?
Let's look. Royalton, Vermont.
You said you've been there.
Yeah, I've been to Sheridan.
It sits on land near the birthplace of Joseph Smith. So there we go. So yeah, you know, someone did that and
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
It looked like it was a parked car that just slid down an embankment into the chapel. A 1997 Nissan Pathfinder.
Well, because the chapel, well, this is a much smaller chapel than the one that's on the Joseph Smith Memorial. The chapel at the Joseph Smith Memorial, and that must be shared. Well, this could be the back. I think they have an addition on the back.
Okay, I'm down.
That's not even a bad wound, though. That's something you can cover up with a sheet of plywood.
Just get some Bondo. You're set.
So what happened? Was a child in the car?
It said no one was in the car.
A Nissan Pathfinder.
The car was just hanging out.
Rolled down an embankment. Where's the embankment that it's going to roll
down?
There's
no picture of the embankment. I'm sorry.
I don't feel like they've done their work here.
Probably not. It's not really very big news.
Well, still, it doesn't beat a Molotov cocktail. If you got to vote for destruction on a chapel, I say a rolling Nissan Pathfinder from 1997 below Molotov cocktail from Grand Theft Auto 3 and 4.
You win.
2, 3, and 4. Let's see. Can we talk about the infantilization of young single adults?
I would love to talk about this.
Talk to me.
This is over at, well, you brought it up. This is over at the Modern Mormon Men blog, which, yeah.
Do we know anything about the Modern Mormon? We've read an article or two from these guys before.
They're a wonderful place. It's like a great blog, but it's like they call it the Manly Mommy blog. It's like a Mormon mommy blog, but with dudes.
Oh, neat. So he writes an article that says, or that it talks about how, I'm just going to summarize because this article kind of bugs me a little bit because I don't know these situations firsthand, but I do look around and see the dates that I've been invited to and how frequently I say no, and I see that this is happening. But he talks about how there's young single adults in their 20s, like 20. 25 or 26.
Yeah, young.
They'll still go out on group dates on a scavenger hunt. And a girl in the ward was, his sister-in-law actually, was having a bunch of YSAs over to make blanket forts. Not to make out in blanket forts, but to make blanket forts and then have treats. And he talks about how this is things that children do and stupid and we shouldn't be doing this, which I agree with. I am of the persuasion that if you want to date somebody, you take them out to dinner where you talk and you discuss. You can go do activities, sure. Go in to entertain yourself, but like entertain yourself with the one woman until you're like a steady object, and then you can find old married people and go play Scrabble or whatever people in relationships do.
Hey, I ignore the game players, okay?
Yeah, you're one now, Jeff. You are there.
We don't take part in that.
You will be a Scattergories champion soon.
If we have friends over, we might play games with them. But sometimes we get emails inviting everyone to come just play games. And I ignore those emails.
When we have friends over, we play games with them.
Have you ever played Headbands?
When we have... Yes, I... No, well, I saw it on your Instagram.
It's pretty much the only game we play. Anyone comes over... And when we have friends over... No, the main reason they come over is we like make dinner together. And dessert, and chat, and talk, and have a good time. And then we just play Headbands, because it's like a way that my wife and I don't know, judge people? I don't know what we do. It's just what we do. I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, so he talks about this. Also, he mentioned something that I had never heard before, but I guess in the Handbook of Instruction, Handbook Number 2, it says, the supervision by responsible adults should be provided for activities for younger single adults, which... he had his sister-in-law was in a ward where that was interpreted as married couples. They had a married couple preside over every activity that a young single adult ward put on, which I think is just asinine. But apparently that's a thing. Now, I will agree with him that I think we avoid the growing up thing, right? I mean, like even as I was moving out onto my own apartment to do my own stuff, people were like, no, dude, you got to live with friends until you get married and then live with your eternal friend. That's how it goes. You just stay with buddies. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, I am 30 years old. I can't live with five guys anymore. I can't do that.
No.
I'm not built for this stuff.
But I think there's a fair point here. And I really wonder, because I'm convinced that, and I think this happens more where there are denser populations of Mormons, not to knock Utah or anything, but yeah, why does it happen? Why you go on scavenger hunts? Why do these things still go down? You know, because I bet you could look at your contemporaries the same age.
Do you feel
age.
Like it's...
you could look at people probably of the same age who are just, you know, working and doing things that adults... is it because everyone else just goes to bars and hangs out, and this is what we do because we don't do that? We just
is this stupidness contributing to the rising age of singles? Like, the fact that we're not getting married until later?
No.
Because we all just get by stupid gimmicky activities?
No.
Let's play Clue and Signs and then go eat at the malt shop?
No, but I think part of it, though, is driven by the fact that men might go on missions and you mature a lot through that, but at the same time, it does set you back 2 years in the professional real-world context. So, honestly, you take longer to grow up, I think, a lot of the time.
Well, but let's look at that, though. Guys come back from a mission where they're, like, they're grown men that they're not.
You know how
do things.
You know how the mission is. It's basically, it's you do a lot of great stuff and you grow up, but at the same time, you know what the dynamics are in an apartment.
Yeah, but then
and with other
home,
elders,
we come home and we've aged, right? We're like, all right, we are man.
It's one
we
big
can take
dorm
women
party.
Out on dates now, right? Like, why do we drop back into this stupid 16 to 18 year old window?
Because it's stupid.
Let's get everybody together and we'll all just do something. I don't know. What do you want to do?
Because it's stupid things that Mormons do. I don't. We're so.
Quit being stupid. That's what we're trying to say.
We take being childlike to an extreme. And we act like
We've misinterpreted what that scripture means.
Yeah. Be thou like unto a child.
No, be thou like unto a grown up and do grown up things.
Yeah, you know what I would love to see is a bunch of like 26-year-olds who just say, you know what we're going to do? There's a wonderful lecture tonight. Let's all just go to it and learn things. And then we'll have things to discuss, and we'll discuss them over mocktails.
That's what I do. I take girls to museums. I take them to exhibits.
I will.
And then, yeah, we have discussion.
And then
if the discussion is very dry, I take them home and never call them again.
Perfectly done. Wonderfully executed. I will give DC credit for this. That's why I don't know if it's just a Utah thing or where, like I said, there's denser populations. Because I haven't seen that sort of stuff as much ever since I moved to the DC area. I don't know if there is a correlation there, but I just noticed that. I wonder how much the region plays into it or not, or the density. But
I don't know,
but
man.
But stop being
dumb.
I'm
just saying it's scary, and we got to stop it now.
And I'll tell you this. When you get married, you can do stupid things and build blanket forts and do really dumb stuff. Because when you're married, you have free license to be an idiot with your spouse.
And it ends with sex. As long as it ends with sex, you can do anything. You can, let's go bowling. That sounds like a fun thing to do. And then we'll go home and try and make a child. I feel like that legitimizes any activity. Scavenger hunt? Absolutely.
Does it end? Yeah, you're going to want to do a scavenger hunt with your spouse.
But then...
Honey, here are your categories. Here are mine. Let's get it done.
But when you're walking around a college campus as a 26-year-old who's already graduated... wearing a funny hat as some sort of dumb gimmick, and it does not end in marital things. You have no excuse. Quit it. Stop it. Just stop it.
Look, you know, the reason this happens is because everyone wants to get married, and everyone uses stuff like this as an excuse to sort of, you know, test the waters a bit and see what's out
there
before actually
just asking someone. There's no commitment that stems out from these stupid things.
No, I'm not saying there's a commitment from there, but look, you know how it is. You might have had your eye on some girl, but you don't really know her, or you don't get a chance to see her. You go to some stupid activity because you're hoping that girl will be there, and then you'll have a chance to strike up a conversation and ask her out. Because otherwise, you just have to wait until Sunday. I can understand that logic.
Sunday's hard.
It is hard. Okay, on to another big topic. This is probably the biggest topic going around this week.
What is it?
That I've seen.
Canning?
This is stemmed especially because Elizabeth Smart has been speaking at some stuff over the past week. And she referenced some interesting stuff. She was speaking about human trafficking. But she talked about how she even didn't try to run away from her captors because she felt so low about herself because of what happened to her. She was sexually assaulted during her time there. And she referenced something she was taught in Young Women when they described it as she was a chewed up piece of gum and nobody re-chews the piece of gum. You throw it away. And that it's easy to feel like you no longer have worth. You no longer have value.
Now this is referencing like a well-intentioned young woman's leader
but look what
talking
she said,
about
she
why
said,
they shouldn't have sex,
yeah,
right?
Well, yeah, but then she said, you know, why would that be even worth screaming about? Why would it even make a difference if you are rescued? Your life has no value. That's what Elizabeth Smart was saying. So this has started as a discussion this week about what you were just talking about, Al, that is it time to fix perhaps the way that we approach the discussions on chastity and virtue with the young women? because, and I think there are two different topics here. I think it's one thing just talking about just chastity in and of itself, and the other thing of stressing the importance that young women understand that being victims of sexual assault does not make them chewed gum.
Which, well, I think that's the fear that a lot of these leaders have, where if they give any wiggle room, right, if they give any sort of you can come back from this, because that's the way it's normally taught, right? They teach and they say, don't do this at all. 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 If you do, like, if something happens, you can come back. Don't worry about it. But don't do this at all. Don't do this at all. Don't do this at all. And
yeah, they don't want to legitimize that poor behavior under the assumption that you can repent for it afterwards.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, so how do you change this so that it teaches the correct principle on both sides of the table, right? Because the correct principle is also, even if you screw up 1,000 times as a 16-year-old, life as a 22-year-old, if you've cleaned yourself up, you're going to be okay, right?
Well, and you are, and that's what frustrates me. I haven't been in young women's, obviously, but I think I've seen this enough this week, and I've heard it from a lot of other people during my life, that they have these discussions in young women, that they talk about things like that. Like
in young men's. We had them in teachers and priests.
Yeah, but teachers and priests, they say, hey, don't be an idiot. Don't go fooling around. Don't go turning the factory on or what have you, right?
That's don't call in the workers for the early shift. You wait until they're supposed to
leave the Teamsters at home today, okay? But the difference, I think, with women is they approach it much more from the perspective of this is your virtue and do not lose it. Because you know what I mean? Like, they don't really talk about it that way with young men. They don't say, hey, your virtue is this valuable thing and you are nothing without it. It's just, hey, don't be an idiot and go out there and mess stuff up and be a carnal, evil man. That's how they stress it with us.
Which works. I mean, I get the message.
Yeah, it does. Well, it works and it doesn't. But I do worry about this because I've heard so many stories that they use these analogies. And I think, like you said, Al, it's because you don't want to leave room to say, hey, people mess up and you can get back on the wagon. It's more like, hey, you're teenagers, so we're going to try to scare you out of doing
right.
anything
wrong. You and I had a buddy who is on a mission now, but like he, as a teenager, he went to a fireside and the guy got up and he said, no, you know, I didn't go on a mission. I guess a mission's not for everybody. For some people, it's the right thing, but for me, it wasn't the right thing. And he came away from that saying, yeah, I think a mission is the wrong thing for me. I don't think I should go. We had to like battle back from it. I'm like, come on, you bonehead. Don't get up there and say that to a bunch of 16-year-olds. Like, you know, keep them pointed the right direction. And so I kind of understand the aversion to giving an out, but at the same time, I mean, people have got to understand that when things happen, or like when they're taken advantage of, or when whatever that situation is, man, that it's not their fault. And like, how do you teach that?
Well, you got to find, you know, more effective ways.
What would you change if you could change something?
Well, before we get to that, well, what would I change? One thing I would change, I think this is an interesting point of the discussion. If you go to the virtue page, if you go to lds.org /young-women-personal-progress/virtue for all that stuff.
Oh, I'll remember that link.
Yeah,
forever.
I know.
Well done.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know why I did that. But if you go there, the first scripture referenced in this entire discussion is Moroni 9:9. And I don't know if you know Moroni 9:9 offhand, but what it says is, and notwithstanding this great abomination of the Lamanites, it did not exceed that of our people in Morientum. For behold, many of the daughters of the Lamanites have they taken prisoners, and after depriving them of that which was most dear and precious above all things, which is chastity and virtue. That is the first scripture referenced in a discussion about chastity with teenage girls, a scripture that's basically referencing sexual assault. I do think, based on things like Elaine S. Dalton's talk in this past conference, I think virtue is an interesting concept because it's also discussing perhaps that societal norms had decayed to such an extent that the women had lost their virtue on their own. Like, you know, they were being worldly in their own approach, right?
Uh-huh.
I can understand both points of view. But I think it is a big problem if you are basically having a sexual assault reference right after where it says, study the meaning and importance of chastity and virtue by reading Moroni 9:9, which talks about if some people take forcibly taking away your virtue, potentially.
Now, how old was Elizabeth Smart when she was taken?
14.
14?
Yeah.
Which, again, I mean, that's like, at what point do you start having these discussions with your daughters, right? I mean, I feel like a lot of people are waiting too long to kind of illustrate what all this is and like what we mean by these different things. Man, I don't know. Like, well, and is it just in the case of you know, rape or these kind of heroic or like just atrocious crimes that happen? Well, or do we also want to give? I mean, do you need to preach more forgiveness and hope to teenagers about coming back from sex?
I personally think we absolutely do. I understand the point of just trying to draw more of a line in the sand, because you don't want to give teenagers a nuanced view on sex.
It sort of is the abstinence approach, right? Yeah. It's saying, well, here's the solution. Just don't do it.
Exactly. And that's what they're saying. Don't do this. It'll mess you up.
Which works for a lot of people.
It's not worth it. But I do feel like a lot of what they teach in some ways, aside from that perhaps being an effective way to do it, does sort of make it seem that, like, hey, you can repent of stuff, but, you know, once you have munched on that apple, that is it. It's over.
I wonder, well, because this is like that article we talked about last week with the girl that had tattoos, right?
Right.
How different would that attitude that people had towards her have been if we were more a doctrine of, you know, the hand of forgiveness is always there, right? Like, don't ever be discouraged. Don't ever feel like you're too far gone. You can always come back. I mean, if that was the major focal point of a young woman's lesson or of a young man's lesson, rather than don't do it and then you'll never need a condom. Hey.
And I think the other discussion is, say that you've willingly gone about stuff and fooled around or whatever and lost your virtue in that sense. But if you repent, do you argue virtue is restored? I think that's one of the points. Like, are we saying that you've repented and the sin is remembered no more, but your virtue is gone because, for whatever argument you might want to make, psychologically, biologically, whatever you want to say? Or is virtue itself something that's able to be restored? And I would argue that it is, because I don't care where you've been. I just care where you are and where you want to go. Well, and I don't think you're any less perfect. And that's the thing, is
so yes, but you have, like, this, I mean, the psychological impact, like Elizabeth Smart, right? I mean, the impact is more than, man, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot more to it than maybe we can give credence to here in this discussion. But yeah, virtue can definitely be restored. Like, you can be as though you had never sinned, right? That's the promise. It is as though you had done no wrong. You're completely forgiven, and the Lord remembers it no more, and neither should you. That being said, I mean, anybody that's been through that stuff will say, this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my entire life.
Oh, for sure.
If I could just change it, if I could just go back and not have made that mistake, I would. I would love to. But you can't, I mean, you can't impress that foreboding road that is the road to forgiveness on the mind of a horny 16-year-old kid. I mean,
well, it's like the same
how
argument.
You balance that?
It's like you could say the same thing. Hey, don't watch porn. Then kid go, you know, we've said this before, but what the heck is porn? And then next thing you know, you've got a kid looking at porn. But
yeah,
I mean, you do run that risk with youth. And that's why I would assume the church has taken approaches things in some ways that it has. But at the same time, I think we could work to restructure some of the language, especially for young women, to especially draw that line in the sand that victims of assault have their virtue intact, and they should.
But I wonder if it wouldn't be worth, like, a very frank semi-annual discussion on chastity through the teenage years, because I don't feel like we got that enough as kids, where we talked about you know, just like a frank discussion on sex, chastity, all that stuff, and how it works, and like what the expectation was from a religious standpoint and all that jazz. I feel like it was kind of shied around and bounced back and forth. And then they'd do this really awkward mutual activity where they'd have, like, a play about not having apples, which meant sex. Yeah. Like, it was really, I mean, the way that it was addressed in my youth was so horribly backwards.
Well, and I will totally admit, from the male perspective growing up, that when these things were so obviously forbidden and dissuaded, that it inevitably piqued my curiosity more than it might have otherwise. I'm not saying that if we never would have been admonished one way or the other, that any sort of life decisions or just weathering temptation would be any easier, because you wouldn't know what's going on. But of course, when it's like, you shouldn't be doing this, and in many ways it makes a very horny 13-year-old kid a little more like, well, why not? This is clearly like the business that's happening. Right. You know, so it's hard, though. I mean, there's no easy way to do it.
Ah, I see what you did there.
I don't see what I did there. I see nothing.
Well,
we can move on.
Anyway, I would be genuinely curious, and we've been enjoying the conversation that's been going on our Facebook post, but write into us. Let us know your thoughts or how it could change. You know, do we just exclude any reference to Moroni 99? Is that the answer?
Moroni, yeah. And that's contact@thisweekinmormons.com, everybody. Find us there.
Mail us now. Hit pause. We'll be here still. So
talk to us.
In other big developing drama, Jeff was excited about this.
Hit me.
Now I am. The church may start banning self-canning at their canneries.
This is
huge.
You
might not be able to bring your own food in.
It's the first step to adopting Obama's welfare program.
That's right, people. Pretty soon you're going to have to buy the sliced apples there and not slice and dry your own apples. I don't have a problem with this because I don't grow my own oats to bring into can, and so I just purchase them there. Problem solved for me. Don't have a problem, people.
Yeah, this leaked.
But there are some hill dwellers and mountain folk that will have a problem with this. And to them I say, buy your own canner, you cheapskates.
Though I do understand it, I guess. The church is saying stuff will still cost the same, but if the cost for you to grow your own fruits or whatever you want on your own and then can them at a church facility is less than having to just buy it there, I could understand.
No, can them in your own facility. Do it in your kitchen. You know what I'm saying?
You want me to, like, use boiled water?
The church is limiting, they're limiting the amount of, like, excess cleanup and whatever else they have to do. By just doing the stuff that they purchase and that their facility is built for. I think that's smart. Good business moves, church. Way to crack down on those, as I said before, hill dweller types.
The funny
you
thing
know,
is, this came out this week because a blog post went out that alleged that all the canneries east of the Mississippi would no longer be allowing canning beginning in July. And the church spokespeople would not actually confirm or deny. They did confirm that there will be a pulling back from the canning, but it's interesting that blog might actually be correct, and they might be closing all self-canning.
Hey, speaking of spokespeople, did you know that we're getting a female, like, PR person in the church?
Ruth, are we going to let her pray for, like, 10 minutes, like, at conference?
Whoa. That was a big moment, Jeff. You got to appreciate that.
I mean the second prayer. The first one was wonderfully succinct. That second lady was like...
There have been long man prayers, too.
I know. I'm just kidding. So, Scott, are you telling me that Scott Trotter is going away?
No, he's getting a partner. A partner in crime. They're going to be like... It's going to be like Anchorman, but with Mormons.
Actually, you're wrong, because Scott Trotter is actually working with Community and Interfaith Relations.
It's the same thing, Jeff. Talking to people.
Yeah, but he's not going to be the media person. So who is this new
spokeswoman? All right, we're not going to split hairs over this. She used to be, I guess she used to be an anchor woman.
And she still is. This is Ruth Todd. So watch for Mormon press things, and Ruth Todd will come your way.
Oh, look at that hair.
Yeah, it's
that
pretty strong.
Hair.
Other loosely Mormon news... Jody Arias.
You can play football in that helmet.
We've never really talked about it on this show, but Jody Arias was convicted of first-degree murder. So, there you go. For those who
why is that relevant to Mormons?
Because she's Mormon. She was baptized, and then she, like, killed her boyfriend. Who introduced her to the church.
Oh. Well, that's, like, the worst missionary outcome ever.
The murder was almost 5 years ago, but it didn't go to trial till this year. So that's that. It's gotten more coverage in Mormon circles simply because of her being a convert and whatever else. But so there you go.
Huh. Weird.
Congratulations.
Let's see here. Oh, yeah. The woman that saw the Book of Mormon musical and then joined the church.
This is news from like a week ago, but we've done it.
Well, that's all right. It's still exciting.
It's actually a pretty funny story. Liza Morong.
Liza Morite.
She went to see the Book of Mormon musical, and then she decided basically that she was going to go troll missionaries on the Mormon.org chat thing where missionaries at the MTC are doing their business. But instead, the missionaries were nice and wonderful, and they didn't mess around. and they were genuine, and she was caught off guard, and she was intrigued. And they started teaching her lessons through Facebook chat.
That's so crazy, man.
And then they even asked to send her a copy of the Book of Mormon, and she thought, like,
I love that she says it was his kindness. Like, she went on there to just troll him and make fun of him, but he was, like, so genuinely kind that she couldn't be mean. It was his genuine kindness, not his message, that caught her off guard.
Yeah. But then it got better, because classic story. So he wanted to send her a Book of Mormon. She sort of relented and was okay with it. But then she read it, and she accepted the challenges that the missionaries gave them. Pay attention, people. Give a challenge. Follow up on it. But that she noticed that she felt happier, her life was different, and things were going better and better. Next thing you know, it's baptism time.
That's so cool. What a great story.
It's pretty cool, actually. I wish more people would come and troll the boards. All right, we got a long show this week. Some final news, a couple other final items. The church owned a bunch of land on the upper part of the Provo River, way out in like Uinta, Summit counties in Utah, and they've sold it to be developed.
It's Park City, yeah?
Yeah, well, east of there, I guess. So anyway, they have sold it to so their property developer based in Dallas can build a high-end development aimed at, as they say, well-heeled fly-fishing homebuyers. You want to talk
finally.
About, you want to talk about a specific demographic? There it is. So the church, basically the church sold out.
No, it's a smart real estate investment.
Yeah, we're going to get rid of beautiful nature so that some schmucks from Dallas can come to Utah and pretend they've seen mountains in their life and build some resort where you can fly fish. You know where else you can fly fish? On the river that's already there. Just drive up there and fly fish.
Yeah.
And don't
but
have
the
to be...
church is getting $1 million for it. That's what's great.
I don't think it's enough.
No, they're getting more than $1 million.
They should be paying us $5 billion.
They are. They will someday. Let's see. Also, the only other thing on here is that Jeff is mad that the Tucson Temple looks like the Tijuana Temple.
I wouldn't say that I'm mad. I'm disappointed.
The Tijuana, Aaron Tuller. Tijuana.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at it. You're like, what is... They're scouting locations for the Tucson Temple, and there's a loose rendering up that they're presenting to approval
First,
boards.
Be it recorded that the TWIM show does not agree that Tucson deserves a temple. Now, all the rest of the conversation is just arbitrary.
Well,
but yeah, so they want to put one there. They're going to put it there anyway, despite our reservations.
Yes, and then it's just going to look like that. I thought the Tijuana design was so incredibly wonderful. Something so fresh, so unique.
Tijuana.
And now to sort of just copy it takes away from that wonder.
Yeah.
How would you feel if there were two Salt Lake temples?
Same way I feel about there being two temples in Salt Lake.
That's not true. There are not two temples in Salt Lake.
Ochre Mountain, American Fork. Like, that's a different city. Let's be honest,
but
people.
But if you do want to be correct about something, the city of South Jordan has two temples within its city limits. It has Ochre and South Jordan. And I believe that is the only city in the church with two temples in its boundaries. Provo will be the second.
You heard it here first, people. We're breaking news. Also, we're obligated here because we love them. Mormon Media Reviews. If you're looking for reviews on movies from a Mormon perspective, go listen to this guy's podcast. He's a cool dude. We like him.
Yeah. Also, look for their combined show they do with others called Mormons at the Megaplex, where they review stuff. They gave us a shout-out on their show last week, and we failed.
We're returning the gesture
to love them accordingly.
Of kindness. We love you.
Yes.
So, guys, a lot of good things this week. We talked about changing the way we discuss virtue with young women, to the canning fiasco,
to
Peggy Fletcher Stack is a loser.
And, of course, the infantilization of the YSA program. Children.
Yes, also Molotov Cocktails, Bryce Harper, and failed to mention, but we still believe, that McKay Coppins is addicted to harmful substances that he uses without his wife's knowledge.
Everyone, please find us at Facebook.com.
It's speculative, but maybe. Yeah, so give us a shout. This Week in Mormons.com. Leave
Prove
a comment,
us wrong, McKay. Prove me now herewith.
I would ask for evidence that he does not use harmful substances.
Yeah, we'll do this like European justice systems. guilty until proven innocent, sir.
Contacted This Week in Mormons is our email, .com, and facebook.com/thisweekinmormons. We got lots of good discussion going on. Jeff's been great about tossing up articles as we get them. If you have something to share with us, share it there or email it to us, and we'll put it up through there. We'd love to get your guys' thoughts on
that. And, of course, find us at The Real Twim on Twitter. Love hearing from you on there. And keep a lookout for Sunday School Bonanza, where we get you ready for gospel doctrine, which is a wonderful thing. And for those of you who don't cross podcasts, I've done some research and learned that we actually have very distinct audiences. Go figure, right? You know, listen to both.
Yeah, who knew?
Yeah, who knew, people? There's those who want a serious discussion about gospel topics in Gospel Doctrine, and those who want to hear the two of us just riff about whatever we feel like for an hour. So, go figure.
They are different things. Okay, anyway, much love, everybody. Have a great week. Jeff, it's been a pleasure.
And the pleasure has also been mine. And we love all of you. Thanks for listening to This Week in Mormons. We'll talk to you next week. May you be safe and merry and bright.